Good afternoon. This is Rob. Who is
hey,
on?
Rob. It's Sam and Thomas, and Patty should be in 1 second.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Thomas. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Good.
And here's Patty.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Patty. How are you?
Very, very good, sir. What's going on up in Tennessee?
It's 28. We're coming back Friday. We can't wait.
I just bet. You know, Thomas was actually up there in Tennessee here just a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were in Knoxville. You're in Nashville, right?
Yeah, I'm in Nashville, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we actually flew into Knoxville, and we went to my wife's hometown in Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours directly south from you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it. Yep. Yeah, wonderful. Well, it's a nice time of year. See family and friends, and very, very exciting. So what's on your mind this cheery afternoon?
Well, so I wanted to, because we're coming up to January, I thought it would be a good idea today to spend our time just looking at 2020. And,
yep.
I just wanted to get you kind of your opinion on a couple things. You know, one thing in particular is like we're really kind of like we're at a plateau right now. I think it's an okay level. It's not a great level, but it's an okay level. You know, we're right on the money, like 1.2 million trailing, you know,
mm-hmm.
not including like some of the insurance stuff that we did. But really, we're like right on it, like almost every month. Like 1 month we're like at 95,000, the next month we're like 105. So it looks like, you know, we're pretty streamlined at 1.2. You know.
No.
But I just don't see, you know, for 2020, I just don't see like an escalation of that. I can see that maybe we could, you know, maintain it, you know. But I just don't see like a dramatic increase to that. And I just wanted to get your opinion of, you know, what other teams have done in the past as far as like maybe bringing on an additional person, you know, like a planning person or a young person. I mean, I've never really had good luck bringing on like, you know, someone younger, you know, and teaching somebody the business. But
mm-hmm.
Just wanted to kind of get your thoughts about that because, you know, I won't speak for Patty. I'll speak for myself. I'm not getting any younger. So, you know, my energy is nowhere near where it was 10 years ago, you know. So, you know, I got to continually be thinking about that because, you know, even to maintain, it's a lot of work, you know, what we do.
Well, and that's the, you know, I was talking to another team. And my guess is your book probably is similar to this person's practice. They just to maintain, they need to bring in like at least $10 million a year.
Exactly. That I think so as well. That's the number I had in my head.
Yeah, that's just a break even. That's just to keep up the 1.2 million. And so if you're going to grow, so you got to bring in 10 just to break even.
Yeah.
If you're going to grow, you need to bring in 20 million.
Right.
And the question is, you know, where does 20 million new come from? We can probably get 10 million new from your existing clients.
I agree.
Right? But then you got to get 10 million brand new from brand new clients.
Right.
And so that means 5 clients with 2 million. Or 10 clients with a million, right? So,
yep.
So 5 clients with 2 million is easier. So the question is, where do you find 5 clients with 2 million? You could get them probably as introductions from your existing clients. But that's, you know, inconsistent. So the second best place is introductions from trusted advisors, CPAs, and attorneys.
But I guess my point, Rob, is that can I bring in $10 million over the next year? Yes, I can do that. The issue is just to get them ramped up to speed is taking it's a lot of work with these new people. So we've actually done this, you know, like because we brought in probably five or six households or maybe a few more than that, but it's about $10 million or maybe a little bit more than that. But, you know, they're requiring a lot of extra work, getting them ramped up and getting them in the system, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the truth, because you want to do a financial plan on each one of them. So you're probably spending 36 hours on each client.
Exactly. I mean, on my desk, I'm seeing, like, all these new accounts that we brought in the last 6 months, and those are the ones we're concentrating the most on.
It's mainly because we've done financial plans on them, and you're right. The financial plans can really be, you know, really quite tedious to get them to the point to where, you know, that it's really a tool for the client to see it as. And but the time spent on just holding the client's hand so that they're get to that point to where we can put them on Supernova calendar and we're talking to them once a month and get them into our normal human thing. It just takes months, and if you get four or five of them all at one time, it can be exhausting doing financial plans for four all at one time.
Oh, yeah. Hard work. So where do you see when you do a financial plan, it's kind of an intimate thing. It's not something you can really delegate to somebody else. To me, I mean, I want to be there asking the question.
Yeah.
Because that's where you have the conversation. You know, that's where you get to know the client. And, I think you could then turn that over to somebody else submit it and have it done, you know, come back with the answers. I don't think you need to be involved in that at all. But then the presentation of the results is where you get your 12-4-2 in. You know, you have that initial meeting. After you've got the financial plan back, you get your agenda, and then you implement the low-hanging fruit, and then you schedule the rest in your 12-4-2 follow-up. Batch process some of it when you're doing everybody. You know, do mortgages for everybody. You do a mortgage for him.
Right.
So you don't have to completely disrupt your life, and most of the things don't need to be implemented immediately, long-term care, etc.
Right.
So the most efficient thing that I mean, that's the most efficient way that I could see doing the process. And the only place I see any leverage for you is turning it over to somebody else to do the paperwork, you know, to get it, you know, do the plan, the actual plan itself. But you probably turn that over to some internally or external person, right?
No,
you
have to submit. So in doing that, you know, it is extremely helpful for me to get on the phone and talk to them and get to know them, and they get to know me and
right.
and do the plans. And we don't have the best tool in the world, you know. So if a particular client has estate planning, it's more of their concern or question. You know, this tool doesn't really help us with that. And I have to admit, I've been kind of learning about what this plan we have can do by doing these plans, and that's even been slowed the process.
Yeah, you should have a pretty robust set of planning tools, and if you can't get them internally, you should, you know, at least get permission to use out the external ones, because you guys need great.
I think it is a pretty good plan. I don't think it's I think it's just like what Morgan has. But it's different. And for us, it's more of an education of going. of like, because we're still, you know, we're so new.
Still learning, yeah.
That Patty's like going through this learning curve, you know.
Well, at Morgan Stanley, I had a financial planning person.
Exactly.
Who knew, you know, if I wanted to take retirement now or later. I mean, he knew what buttons to push to make things, and I'm having to learn all
but
that.
But they have that here as well, though. You know, they have help.
That desk is absolutely fabulous.
I mean,
every single time I pick, they're always so patient with me. And you're absolutely right. But, and each one of them is unique and different. And but, yeah, at Morgan, there was a person that knew the tool inside and out.
Well, you guys have got to, you know, you got to give yourselves credit, you know, for the non-recurring challenges you're having from moving to another firm.
I agree with that because to get close to where we were, and we are, I mean, we're like right on top of where we were over there. So that's to be commended, I believe, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know it doesn't always go like that.
No, not at all. And it's been a year, has it been?
A little over a year, yeah. We moved over in September.
Pretty impressive.
I kind of messed up, though, because, you know, like, I took the revenue goal, you know, on the back end instead of the asset goal. And we smashed the asset goal. And we're probably going to come up short on the revenue goal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the method we need to focus on for 2020 is exactly how can we get our revenue goal up and this additional $10 million plus $10
million. And by the way, it's actually, the good thing is it's really not 2020, it's really 2021 is the year. That's the year to hit that
so
number.
Next year's got to be the ramp. Next year's got to be the escalation into the 21
right.
finale.
Right.
So if you you need to work hard for 2 years more, is what you're saying.
That's not what I wanted you to say. I wanted you to say, Sam, I got a plan so that you're going to work a little less, but you're going to make more. I've been waiting for you to say it, Rob, but, you know, I'm just...
The problem with all the planning that I do still requires your brain and your time. And... you know, you can put it in meeting with centers of influence or meeting with your existing clients and getting introductions, or you can do it by having a mastermind group, or you can whatever, but they all take time.
And honestly, I think that's what's good about having a coach. You know, there's multiple things, but one thing is keeping us focused, you know, because, you know, plus this is a busy time of year anyway, but,
right.
you know, we got to stay focused on the main thing, you know, so that's pretty much what we need you for, because otherwise we're scattered all over the place, you know, and I just can't be doing everything, you know, from managing
right.
to also looking for business, you know, I just can't do it.
Well, then, you know, I always said your job as a financial advisor, you got two jobs. One, talk to existing clients. Two, talk to prospects. And if you're doing something else, you can get somebody else to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. How much time are you actually spending talking to prospects compared to how much time you're spending doing other things? If you talk to more prospects, you'll get more business.
Right.
So it's just a time allocation opportunity than it is. No, there is no more time. It's just deciding and prioritizing what's important. So I need to get in front of people. How do I get in front of people that want to say yes? Well, the best place is your existing clients, because they love you already and they will give you introductions. But you must ask. And the second best is centers of influence and people that love you outside of your practice and some inside your practice. that love you and want to give you introductions. And those are all going to be warm opportunities. Done properly, that's all you need. You don't need anything else. I can give you seven techniques for acquiring business. But your existing book, I remember one time my brother came in, he worked for Dictaphone, I worked for Merrill Lynch. And I said, I need to get some more business. And he looked at my books, which were, remember all the books you used to have lined up with all the clients in them? Yeah.
I remember that.
And he looked at me and he looked at those books and he said, why don't you ask those people for introductions? And I go, oh, you know what he did? He said, I'd start right there.
Right.
Because he didn't, you know, he had no recurring business. With Dictaphone, all you did was, you know, go out and sell every day a new client.
Right.
But that was a hard job. My job was a piece of cake compared to his.
Right.
So, you know, that's the kind of obvious one. When I used to have to recruit new FAs, I used to say same thing. Where's the best way to get recruits for my existing FAs, right? If I create the right environment, they love me. And if they love me, they'll introduce me to people that aren't being loved.
That's all we're looking to do, too. Our clients can be our bird dogs for those people that they know that aren't being as loved as they feel they are.
Right. Okay, so one of the things you guys can do is, an easy thing. The team before you guys asked me the question, Rob, do you think we should try and grow through acquisition of other teams? And I said, sure. It takes a while. It has to be the right acquisition. I mean, it's like any corporation that's worth its salt is always looking to grow through lots of different ways. One is acquisition, but it should be accretive. It should be a great match. And I'd say 80% of the acquisitions that corporations make are terrible. Okay?
Yeah.
But the ones that are good at it, they really do it well.
Yeah.
So the answer is do good acquisitions, right? The other thing is to help, you know, be the team that everybody else wants to be. So make it look easy. Even though you know it's hard and you're working your butt off, for the people that are watching you, your manager and other people, you want to make it look easy. And you want it to look like you have plenty of capacity. Why? Because then they're anxious to give you new business and they're anxious to be a part of your team because you seem to have solved the puzzle. Okay, so if there's a team out there in the market that would, you think that would be a good fit for your office, and that person's close to retirement, that's a good acquisition. If they're in the office and the same thing, that's a good acquisition. Anyway, it's, you know, the business is, right now the biggest challenge firms have is this concept of senior people, baby boomers, retiring and turning over their practice to people that aren't trained to grow the practice. Okay? So they've done a nice job of building teams, but the rainmaker is going to retire. And the future people are not going to grow the business the way the rainmaker did. So that $10 million that goes out every year will be a net bottom line negative $10 million every year. And so the practice will shrink, and overall the office will shrink, and overall the firm will shrink. So if I were running the firm or a region, that would be my number one priority, would be to teach the second generation how to grow. Because you guys know how to grow. I mean, if I Sam, you know how to grow, right? You may not know all my techniques, but you know how to do it. If you had to, you could do it.
Doesn't feel like I know how to do it, but...
No, you do. Okay.
Maybe then going back to where you said earlier is that, you know, the referrals, introduction from clients is one thing, but CPAs, attorneys, and those centers of influence, and actually trying to make 2020 more about growing our COIs and growing that mastermind group. Now, we are building the mastermind group of the National Christian Foundation, and that is, but that's just a slow, that has to go at its pace. So that is going to become something. But going to the COI thinking, we could do a much better job on knowing CPAs and attorneys and getting out there more and meeting with them monthly, like you outlined in the book. And maybe that's what next year should be more about, is finding those bird dogs.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. That's the number... The number one way, as I said, is through your existing book. The number two is centers of influence. Okay. We can do the others. We can do mastermind groups. We can do niches is also good, but niches is so close to centers of influence. I mean, it's a variation on centers of influence. Because inside every niche, you have a center of influence. But I would look at niches and centers of influence, then the mastermind group, then things like community involvement and LinkedIn and other things. But the team, I just am starting to coach a team up in Pennsylvania and asked where their business comes from. And they said, oh, comes from, you know, we have a couple of CPAs and a couple of attorneys, and they send us, that's where all our new business comes from. So, you hear that, you know, where people have been in the business a long time, they've built relationships, and they're coining it from those people. They don't do the other things. They have, you know, no knowledge of niches, no knowledge of mastermind groups or anything like that. But they do have centers of influence, and that's why they're successful. So it's always one, it's always something like that, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we teach it. If it didn't work, Sam, I wouldn't teach it.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's working for them. I'm coaching another team that's a big team. And the interesting thing is that the senior partner is in charge. He made himself in charge of brand management, which is very interesting. So he's in charge of making sure from internal that Supernova's working, that the meetings go on, that the brand is maintained, and that there's consistency in the process throughout the team members. Now, that's typically the CA's role, right? making sure Supernova works and everything. But he's kind of really interesting. And so we talked about introducing the team using the five-star model. He loves that. He said, I've got good relationships with centers of influence. I'm just way too inconsistent with the experience. They don't really know what we do. I'm going to invite two partners from the law firm over, and we'll put on our show, and everybody get up and talk and tell what we do. Well, you can do that, guys. And that will be very impressive. You know, go back to chapter 5 and look at, let's see, chapter 5, the 5 steps for introducing new centers of influence. Do this for me, too. Get the book, The Supernova Multiplier, on audio, and listen to the chapter on developing centers of influence. Just listen to it over and over. If you want to watch the video from Chapter 5, it goes through exactly what I'm saying now. How do you develop, you know, why do you meet with them in their space? Why do you meet at your space? How do you teach them the enthusiastically endorsed model? Why does that make sense? How do you then use the enthusiastically endorsed model to build relationships in the community and get more people to connect with you because you're a connector for them? So think of yourselves as connectors. I think it changes your mentality from, I need to get an introduction from this guy. Think of your job when you're not here as a connector in the community. You know, when you're not doing financial plans and managing money and other, you're a connector. So whatever anybody needs, you connect them because you get this master list of enthusiastically endorsed professionals in the community. So you're constantly meeting people and constantly finding the best person to send people to, whether it's a orthodontist or an orthopedic surgeon or a cardiologist or a drug counselor, or it's a financial person, or it's a CPA or an attorney or whatever. But then those people, but then you meet with them as a group, right? We talked about this.
Yep.
Bring together the enthusiastically endorsed people twice a year. Take them on a dinner cruise in the summer and bring them together during the holidays and just make sure they know each other. The business will take off if you do that. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It does. Kind of get out there and new people and spread the word.
Right. And it's not painful, guys. This is you're good at this anyway. You like doing it. You're good people, and so you help people. So what do? I help people. Right? That's what you do.
Yeah.
So this is the theme for the year is we're going to help more people solve their problems, whatever they are. You just get out there in traffic and do it. It's a wonderful thing. It's a great mindset.
Yeah.
Here's another thing. I was thinking about this because firms have a terrible time approving you for articles.
Mm-hmm.
Think about doing something in the community that would be noteworthy enough they'd write an article about you. You'd accomplish a couple of things. One, you'd do something great for the community. Two, you'd do something that would be very lasting for yourself. What do I mean by that? Once they write an article for you in the newspaper or magazine, it lasts forever in Google. So anytime they Google you,
uh-huh,
instead of not being able to find you or having a brand that looks like everybody else's, up pops this article about you that talks about what a wonderful person you are in the community. I don't think it's that hard to do that either. It's just going one step beyond where you're already going.
Yeah.
Most of us are already doing things, but you know, we just don't take it that one step further. So when you become president of the organization, you want to do something that kind of lights up the community. And you don't have to do it forever. You just do it and then retire. Let somebody else do something exciting.
Right.
But they'll write an article about you. Make sure they write the article. You can get people to write articles. They're looking all the time for a good article. So you create a great story, get them to write an article, and then it lasts forever. And it's free. instead of spending $20,000 on ads or whatever, you can do this for free. Just take some work. But it's probably work that you may be passionate about anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough ideas?
Yep.
Good, Sam. Okay. Run with them.
Okay. So we talked last month about our mission statement, and we sent you over a copy of ours. We can talk about that another time. We just wanted to see
Yeah, let's talk about that the next time. Can you resend that, Patty, to me, rdnap@gmail.com?
Rdnap. Yeah, we'll make sure that that's the email that we sent this to.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll look for it again. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. All right,
thank
have a good one. Yeah, happy holiday, guys. Okay.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.